It is Saturday, January 16, 2016. Welcome to the latest edition of the Raw Deal Podcast right here at www.gerwck.net, gerwck.net, your source on the World Wide Web since 1997 for the latest in pro wrestling news. I'm the host, Frank D, but I'm not alone. As always, I got my tag team partner, Mr. Atlee Green. What's going on, big man?
What's going on, Frank D? I'm happy to be here. This is the second Raw Deal of the new year, and I can't wait to get going.
Absolutely. Why don't you go ahead and plug your social media out there for the listeners?
You can guys hit me up on Twitter at Atlee Green. And if you guys want to see some of my blogs about pro wrestling, MMA, movies, and other things, definitely hit up thegreenscreen.net.
Absolutely. And check out youtube.com/Gerwck Report Podcast. That's the official YouTube channel of Gerwck.net. We have tons of interviews up there that we've done in the past with the likes of Vince Russo, Teddy Long, Matt Hardy, Eric Bischoff, Ted DiBiase, beautiful Bobby Eaton. They're all up there right now for your listening pleasure. youtube.com/Gerwck Report Podcast. And Adley, you know, a big story broke yesterday. In case you don't know, you should know. Big Vito, who is a former wrestler, WWE, WCW, ECW, has a lawsuit going on right now against WWE, concussions, etc. And a judge actually ruled that, you know, they can have a discovery of evidence right now as part of this situation. So, you know, for me, you know, looking at the situation as it is, it's not looking too good for WWE if they go all the way back to when Vito was actually competing there, because they were not as, you know, stringent on the concussions as they are today. You know, the people down there at Former Center, they wear helmets now when they're in the ring, taking bumps. They weren't doing that in 2005. So what's your thoughts on the situation?
My thoughts are that C, the letter CTE, are the three worst letters that any sports or entertainment industry wants to hear right now, because we all know what's going on with the NFL, with hundreds of thousands of ex-football players suing the NFL over discovery of CTE and the fact that they allegedly hid these results from the players as well as the doctors. They knew what was going on. So I think now Judge Vanessa Bryan, who reportedly allowed for discovery, I think everybody's starting to take this seriously, because you know this, that with pro wrestling, a lot of bumps and bruises happen. And plus, one thing that I kind of find interesting is that Vito LaGrasso was there, you know, back in 2005. I'm not sure when he left WWE, but he was there during Chris Benoit's tenure. And the reason I bring this up is because when the whole Benoit situation happened with the murders and whatnot, and Congress came in and, you know, did some reports and looked at WWE's files, it was revealed that Benoit had failed a couple of steroid tests. But WWE never reported it. They never suspended him before. They gave him a warning. And that was kind of shocking. So that kind of proved, okay, there's some preferential treatment going on with some of the bigger names, and they're not really doing much about certain things. And the reason I bring that up is because if they were hiding that, what else were they hiding? Hopefully not much, but we're going to find out now because, again, Judge Vanessa Bryan has actually allowed for discovery. And according to PW Insider, what that means is that discovery phase of the investigation, Evan Singleton, former WWE developmental wrestler, and Vito LaGrasso can actually do several things during their investigation. They can see if WWE should have had knowledge, and also the duty to disclose the risk of long-term injuries as far as any neurological damage that took place. They can also look and see whether or not WWE may have breached that particular aspect of their duties. They could also see if this went on after Evan Singleton and Vito LaGrasso left WWE. So they have a wide net to fish with as far as what they can look for in the investigative phase.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because in the it's a book out there called Chris and Nancy. I don't know if you've heard of it or not. It you know, details the Chris Benoit murder suicide. And one of the parts of the book I find very interesting is when Nancy Benoit talks to Chris about, you know, the wellness policy is a joke. You know that you're taking stuff and you're taking these tests supposedly and they're, you know, passing you, but you know you're doing it. So she right there said that the wellness policy is a joke. Now, the only problem that I have with Vito is that it's Vito trying to say that all the stuff that's wrong with him right now physically, this all falls under WWE, because the guy had 10 years in the indies. He had 10 years in ECW when he had the most violence going on. WCW, and then he made his way over to WWE. So is he going after WWE for this? Because you can't go sue ECW and you can't sue WCW.
No, I think you're onto something because I'd venture to guess that when you're working in ECW, especially when he was a member of the Baldies feuding with New Jack, that he probably took a bunch of guitar shots to the head, steel chair shots to the head, staples gun shots to the head, and everything else you can think of while in ECW. So you can't go sue Paul Heyman, but you can sue the guy that now owns the company, Vince McMahon. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all unfolds. But one of the other things that's interesting is that WWE has always had this particular belief, and they have it to this day, that if you get hurt during a match, you suck it up and you keep going, regardless of what the injury is. And if you don't do that, then you get made fun of. You become a pariah in the locker room. When Sin Cara, during he broke his finger in a match with Del Rio, and he wanted to stop the match, but Del Rio was like, "No, don't be a wimp," and kind of just stiffed him around a little bit, because you get respect if you finish a match where you're hurt, and if you don't do it, then your credit in the locker room goes way, way down. So I think that there's a lot of peer pressure to keep working injured, not only from the boys in the locker room, but also you don't want to miss out on that royalty money. I mean, all those guys working on a downside guarantee, so you want that t-shirt money, you want that video game money, you want the action figure money, and you got to keep working as long as you can, injury or not. So not all of it is WWE. There's a choice too with the individual.
He's trying to state that he did not know that he was going to be injured the way he was in professional wrestling. That's when the original story broke, whenever he fought his loss. I think it might have been a year ago, maybe two. I might be pushing it with two. But I remember reading that, he said that majority of his injuries came from WWE. Now, if you're WWE and you have this vast video library, you can show the court, hey, look what this guy was doing in ECW in circa 1999. Look at what he was doing in WCW. Look when he came here. So this guy might have already had pre-existing injuries before he even got to WWE.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Plus, I mean, seriously, when you start, I'm speaking from experience on this. When you start in professional wrestling and you go through your very first days of training, you know right away that there is a high risk factor when participating in this industry. And just with a simple, basic back bump, your trainers always tell you to tuck your chin before you take the bump. That way, you're not hitting the back of your head. But what happens is when people get more and more experience, they don't really tuck their. Some people don't tuck their chin that often. And I've even seen people where they don't tuck their chin at all, and they just boom, they get hit in the back of the head and they take a flat back bump. And I'll ask people, hey, I noticed you don't tuck your chin. Does that hurt? It's like, no, I mean, it doesn't hurt at all. So some people just have that biologically where they can keep getting hit in the back of the head over and over again, not feel it, but even though damage could be adding up. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that could be happening. Your Vito could be outright honest and feeling that, hey, I got injured. I didn't know I was going to get injured while doing all this, or he could be looking for a payday. We really don't know.
Well, to me, honestly, it just seems to me like the guy is looking for a payday. Now, the guy's been upstanding and he's actually trying to help the wrestling industry. And this isn't about money. This is about opening a wide door for Congress or somebody to take a look at professional wrestling and see that the guys actually go get, hurt, bruised, banged up. If that's what he's trying to do, more power to him. But I'm just thinking, you got this shark of an attorney, Jerry McDevitt from WWE, that's going to fight this tooth and nail. And you and I were talking about it offline. What can possibly happen in this situation where we're kind of, on the same level here of thinking that there might be a out of court settlement for this situation because WWE really doesn't want Congress, the federal government, looking into their business.
Oh, absolutely. The last thing, the absolute last thing WWE wants is a judge's decision going against them, especially in a CTE case, because they saw how much money the NFL had to fork over, and they don't want to be forking over that kind of money either. Because if Evan Singleton and Vito Lograsso, if it goes to trial and they get ruled in their favor, oh, the vultures are coming out, Frankie. Everybody is going to start suing WWE, saying, "Oh, I had CTE too. Oh, they were negligent in my care as well." The floodgates are going to open up wider than you could possibly imagine, and that's the thing that sets a precedent. And WWE, above all, doesn't want that. So when it looks like they're going to lose, if it looks like there's a possibility they're going to lose. Not just outright, it looks like they're going to lose. If there's a possibility, they're going to lose. At the end of the day, they would rather fork over $1 million than be willingly, than be forced in a judge's ruling to fork over $20, $30, $40 million.
Right. And you know something? Here's the deal. I want to say this right now. I'm not saying that Vito is a liar by any stretch of the imagination. Not saying that at all. I'm just saying that for a guy who's been wrestling as long as he was wrestling and was an active participant in the business and knew what he was getting himself into when he was training, to blame all of that on WWE, I don't think that's right at all.
I mean, it's in a way, it's not right, but at the same time, it's the only company he can blame because they own all the IP of WCW and ECW. They own everything about the mainstream level of his career.
True, and that right there is going to probably be the problem when this, if this thing goes to trial. Because like I just said earlier when we were talking about this, if WWE wants to do some sneak shit, they could play those videos and show how violent things were in ECW when Vito was working with, you know, say New Jack or somebody. You know what I'm saying? They could play all this stuff. And it's really going to hurt his case because they'll say, listen, we own the video library, we own the trademarks, but that's it. You know, any kind of liability from WCW or ECW does not fall under World Wrestling Entertainment.
Oh, I guarantee you if this goes to trial, they're going to pull out all the stuff. They're going to show ECW stuff, WCW stuff. If they can find some of his indie stuff on YouTube that looks a little violent, they're going to play that as well. And plus, they're going to get a lot of people. They're going to get doctors. They're going to get specialists. They're going to get wrestlers that are going to vouch and say, oh, no, we knew the risks. And it's going to be up to Evan Singleton, Vito LaGrasso, and their attorneys to also find people that will say, we didn't know that CTE was a risk, and we were never told this, and this is the culture in WWE. So, if this goes to trial, man, the gloves are coming off on both sides.
Well, you know, we can go back on one thing here that actually may help Vito in his case. It goes all the way back to the CM Punk interview with Colt Cabana, where CM Punk mentioned that, you know, he had this growth on his back and he was forced to work with it. They were feeding him Z-Packs and he was banged up all the time. And he would tell them this, and well, we can't do anything about this. You got to go out there and wrestle Ryback. You got to go out there and do this. You got to go out there and do that. So, I mean, you know, it could very well, that could work in his favor, but I really doubt that CM Punk is going to want to get involved in this situation.
Oh, he's definitely not going to want to get involved because of the fact that he's dealing with his own lawsuit with the WWE doctor currently suing him. But the other thing is, if they goes to trial and they both have to get witnesses and people to speak on their behalf, WWE is going to have a much easier time getting people to stick up for them than Vito and Evan Singleton are going to have getting people to speak against WWE. Because if they find people that haven't worked for WWE in, let's say, 10, 20 years, and they're like, yeah, I'll speak out against them, you know what WWE is going to do? Hey, do you want a job? Do you want a payday? And guess what? They no longer have somebody speaking in their favor. So it's going to be an uphill battle on both sides, but especially for Evan Singleton and Vito LaGrasso. But again, if they they have to be very thorough in the investigative stage of this discovery and see if they can find clear, concise, and concrete evidence that WWE was negligent in their duty to disclose information about the risk of neurological damage.
We shall wait and see. This is going to be very, very interesting because, like you just said earlier, man, the gloves are going to come off if this thing goes to trial. And this is not something that WWE is going to want at all. And this is not even going to hurt WWE. This is going to hurt the entire industry of wrestling. This is going to hurt. It's going to trickle down all the way to TNA and Ring of Honor and other places. So this is the reason why, you know, WWE is probably going to want to nip this shit in the bud before it gets big.
Oh, of course, because, again, there's always a trickle-down effect. I mean, once they realize, oh, we can win this from the top dollars, we can beat WWE in something like this, then everybody's going to be like, okay, what about the second biggest company? What about the third, the fourth, the fifth biggest company? What about the indies? What about New Japan? So a lot of stuff's going to come out from this. If they could, this discovery phase, you know, bears fruit, you know?
And speaking of injuries, let's talk about the injuries right quick, because Randy Orton recently came out, Adley, and stated that he does not need neck surgery. Now, he's basically saying, you know, whatever you read on the internet, don't believe the shit because it's probably bullshit. What's your take on that, man?
I mean, nobody knows better than Randy Orton what he needs to do as far as his body medically and if he really needs to have any type of neck surgery or not. I mean, the thing is, Randy Orton is also a company guy, and he has no bones about sticking up for the company and doing what he has to do. And right now, there is this movement in WWE where they do not want their wrestlers talking about injuries. Because they just don't want to be known as this injury farm, which is really happening right now. Wrestlers are getting injured. You know, John Cena, Seth Rollins, Cesaro, the list goes on. And we now have Randy Orton. So Randy Orton could be lying or he could be telling the truth. We don't really know, but it just it, but we're talking about this subject because there is some doubt as to whether or not he's telling the truth. And if he's lying, you can't blame him considering WWE's MO on don't talk about injuries.
Right, I mean, there's, you know, rumor going around right now that Sasha Banks is injured, but Sasha Banks came out and stated that Dave Meltzer was wrong about her being injured. Basically said that Dave Meltzer needs to get a life. That's what Sasha Banks said.
Oh, no, of course, because the thing is, Dave Meltzer is going to be reporting on all this stuff, and he has a lot of sources, not just for the WWE, but the entire injury. And on his radio show, I believe he talked about how he got the word from a couple of sources that usually pan out that, you know, that Sasha Banks was injured, and Sasha Banks got mad because she did her best. She did not tell anybody and everybody. She kept her mouth shut that, hey, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not telling anybody that I'm injured. And then you have a reporter like Dave Meltzer who says, hey, I found out Sasha Banks is injured. So Dave Meltzer's doing his job and just reporting the news, but Sasha Banks is like, damn, I couldn't keep it a secret if she's really injured. She couldn't keep it a secret, and she's obviously going to be mad at the person that basically dropped the dime on her, you know?
Right, exactly. And that just, you don't trust anybody when it comes to things like that because you don't know who Meltzer has on his payroll. So
Exactly.
you never know. I remember one point in WWE, man, that they were checking people's cell phones to see who was, you know, giving information to dirt sheets. So.
Oh yeah, one of their writers, actually one of the guys, I forget his name, but it's the one gentleman that actually is one of the bookers for TNA right now. He actually, Stephanie McMahon caught him with Observer newsletters in his suitcase. So I mean, it happens.
Right. And we're going to, you know, transition from talking about injuries. Let's talk about another story going on right now in the world of professional wrestling. Let's talk about Sting going into the WWE Hall of Fame. Now, they played a video on Monday Night Raw this past Monday night in front of the crowd in New Orleans. JBL made the announcement that Sting was going into the Hall of Fame. They played this very, very cool video going through Sting's whole career from Surfer Sting all the way down to the Crow Sting to finally arriving in WWE. And I'm telling you right now, the crowd in New Orleans, man, I don't know what the hell was wrong with these people, but they showed absolutely no respect to Sting. No reaction whatsoever when that video was done playing. You know, normally when people go into the Hall of Fame, you see the crowd, you know, stand up and they're cheering or whatever. You know, this is awesome, chance for some shit might happen. There was none of that with the New Orleans crowd, and I was very, very surprised and taken back by the lack of reaction for Sting.
You know, I was a little shocked that Sting didn't get a bigger reaction when he announced that he was the newest member of the Hall of Fame, in front of the New Orleans crowd. But I'm not surprised, and I'm not surprised for a couple of reasons. Number one, if you've been watching Raw lately, you notice this, Frank D, that the Raw crowds, as of late, sit on their hands for the most part because they're sitting through a very boring 3 hour show, so it takes a lot to pop them. So they probably just were bored already and didn't really react to anything, including a Sting Hall of Fame video. Plus, I actually think that Sting being in the Hall of Fame would have been a bigger deal if this was his first time working with WWE. Because if you think about it, a lot of people that watch pro wrestling today in WWE, the only thing they know Sting from is his WWE career. And if you look at his career in WWE, he has three matches. He won one of them on Raw in a throwaway match, but he lost his two big matches. He lost to Triple H at WrestleMania in a match that was so-so, and then he lost to Seth Rollins at Night of Champions, which is a really good match. So there are probably some fans who don't really know about the man called Sting, and they're probably thinking, why is this guy going in the Hall of Fame? But to the fans that know, and to the people that know, like you and I, Frank, do you know Sting is very, very deserving of this honor. And if there are fans listening to this show that have no idea what Sting truly brings to the table, my advice is for you is go on the WWE Network right now and look up some of Sting's best matches. You can look up his classic match with Ric Flair at the very first Clash of Champions that put Sting on the map. He had an awesome tag team match where it was him and Lex Luger against the Steiner Brothers at Super Brawl 1991. You can also look at his Ken and Cable finals match. It started King 92 against Vader. He had a great match. If it was a false count anywhere match with Mick Foley at Beach Blast in 1992. And of course, even though one of his most heralded matches is at the Great American Bash 1989, one of my personal favorites is Sting versus the Great Muta for the NWA Television Championship. I mean, those are just some of his amazing, amazing matches. That people can go back and look and say, wow, this is why people really like Sting. And of course, even though the match itself wasn't the best, it was clearly one of the best moments, one of the best builds in pro wrestling, and that's Sting's 1997 encounter with Hulk Hogan at Starrcade 1997.
Right, and I've always enjoyed his match he had with Ric Flair at the Great American Bash 1990 in Baltimore. That was a damn good match, and that was the match where Sting won the WCW Heavyweight Championship.
Absolutely. He came back from the knee injury, and then he won the title finally. So,
right. So, Sting is very deserving. I mean, there's nothing more that we can say about Sting. Sting definitely deserves to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. And I heard, saw some people on Facebook, and they were just basically, Sting doesn't deserve it, to anybody but Sting. Why does Sting need to go in the Hall of Fame when he only had a couple matches in WWE and he lost? And I'm thinking to myself, you stupid bastards, do you not realize the guy was in WCW? You have the WWE Network, right? Like Abby just said, go on the WWE Network and go research Sting. And they got a lot of Sting content on the WWE Network. They got matches from the Clash of Champions. They got matches from Starrcade, Great American Bash, Super Brawl, Sold Out. All that different shit's on the network right now for your viewing pleasure. So go find out who the man called Sting is. But Sting definitely deserves being there. But I do agree with you, Adley, that, the fans sit through a boring 3-hour show already. And, I will say this. Sting going into the Hall of Fame, it was already, the story had already broke earlier in the day to begin with. People already knew about it. So it wasn't like a big deal. If WWE had kept it a secret, then it would have been, I think we would have got a bigger reaction. I mean, he got the so-so pop, but not the big pop that I was expecting to get. But, in all honesty, if you go back to Sting's run in WWE, the reactions have been, the crowd reactions were kind of mixed.
Oh, no. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, Frank T. I mean, they broke the news earlier in the day because WWE wants to be a big part of that 24-hour news cycle where people are not just talking about, this latest acquisition in the NBA or this Sports Center highlight moment. They want people to talk about WWE as well. And of course, when they broke the news earlier in the day that Sting is the member of the headlining member of this year's class of the Hall of Fame, everybody was talking about it beforehand. Everybody saying congratulations. Even LeBron James came out and said, hey, congratulations. Sting is one of my favorite wrestlers. Good for him. So it got people talking. But then when they go on television and make it not only make a big deal about the announcement, but also they present it as if they're telling you us for the first time, it's not going to get that big of a reaction. It's like, okay, yeah, wow, we already knew 8 hours ago.
Right, and that was how I felt about it. I mean, it was like I said, it was a cool video package. I wish that the New Orleans crowd would have been hyped for it a little bit more than what they were, but nonetheless, what's done is done. I think moving forward, though, when they play that video at house shows, they play it, as we get closer to WrestleMania, people are going to make a bigger deal about Sting going to Hall of Fame because it's a very, very big deal.
Agreed, absolutely.
And on that note, we're going to talk about a WWE Hall of Famer right now. A guy who supposedly, now this is all speculative, but supposedly this guy is headed back to WWE. And I'm talking about the one and only Hulk Hogan. Now, Hulk Hogan, was fired by WWE last year after the racial rant had surfaced from a sex tape that he had been a part of. And WWE was quick to wash his hands of Hulk Hogan. And now there's rumors going around that Hogan will be a part of WrestleMania 32. We don't know for sure. Take it with a grain of salt right now. But me personally, I don't think Hogan's going to be a part of WrestleMania 32. I think as long as he has the sex tape lawsuit going on with Gawker, who knows what else might come up from that tape that we don't know about yet. And I think WWE might want to continue to distance himself away from Hulk Hogan until he's free and clear of all this, and then bring him back. I mean, we already knew at some point in time that Hogan was going to come back anyway.
I mean, yeah. I mean, WWE always forgives and forgets with everybody and brings people back into the fold eventually. But the one thing you have to wonder for WWE, who's very sponsor happy, they're trying to get all these corporate sponsors to sponsor their product, they got to wonder if somebody's going to stay away from them or somebody's going to say, hey, we don't want to be associated with WWE if they're going to be associated with Hulk Hogan. So they have to weigh that and see, okay, is the risk worth the reward? And, I mean, what potential does Hulk Hogan bring? What does he bring? I mean, is he worth more than the K Jeweler sponsorship? Is he worth more than the Toys R Us sponsorship, the Coca-Cola sponsorship that they have? So they really have to think about stuff like that. I mean, there's also the possibility that no one's going to care about what he said once he returns. I mean, WWE is in this state right now where they've lost John Cena, they've lost Seth Rollins, they lost Randy Orton all to injuries, and they really want this WrestleMania to be the legit record holder. But the difference is, as you know, Frank D, and as internet fans though, WWE usually lies about their attendance at WrestleMania. Whatever the real attendance is, they usually add about 10,000 to 12,000 people. And because they're pro wrestling, nobody really looks into it except for Dave Meltzer. Nobody really looks into the actual numbers and say, hey, WWE's lying. But now the thing is, you're not just trying to make an all-time record. You're trying to break the Pontiac Silverdome record. This is the one record that WWE has been bragging about for years, and now they have a legitimate chance to break it. And they're risking, okay, do we bring back Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, and The Rock for the chance to legitimately break this record? But you have to wonder, like, us smart fans know, Hulk Hogan can barely move. Hulk Hogan can't cut a promo without messing up his lines. He can't wrestle. So what does he really bring to the table besides a quick nostalgia pop that's not going to sell any tickets and not get any more buys on the network or pay-per-view?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of mixed on the situation, honestly, man, because it just seems like they're kind of easing up a little bit on Hulk Hogan. If you watch the video for Sting on Monday, he was in that video. It was footage of them from WCW. So you can't tell the story about Sting without having Hulk Hogan in it. You can't do it. So really a lot of it too, honestly, is you can't not tell the story about WWE without bringing up Hulk Hogan. It's impossible. And even Triple H said, a couple months ago that he would like to see Hogan come back to the company. I understand what you're saying as far as would Hulk Hogan mean a damn thing now. And I do think that to a lot of his Hulkamaniacs, he would mean something big. Is Hulk Hogan going to put 100,000 people inside the AT&T Stadium? Absolutely not. I don't think anybody can do that. In the current state that WWE is in right now, with the fact that you have all these different guys injured, and you know, it's just, I don't see it happening myself. I really don't. But honestly, if he's going to be there, it'll be cool to see the Hulkster back on WWE TV. You know what I mean? The guy said some shit he shouldn't have said. We've all done that, and it's time to move on from it at this point. And if they want to bring him back on the fold, I have no problem with it, to be honest with you.
No, I mean, it all just depends. It's risk versus reward. They really just have to weigh their options and see if this is a good investment. That's the bottom line.
Right, and honestly, I think it would be a good investment. I think because they can make a lot. They were making a lot of money off that Hulkamania merchandise. So I think that would be a good investment for WWE. I really think it would be. I mean, but Hogan has got to come back, and he has got to say, you know what, brother? There ain't shit else out there that's going to come out from nothing. I have kept my hands clean of every damn thing. You ain't going to find nothing, brother. Nothing else is going to come out, and that's what he's going to have to prove to them, that they can trust him. Because if they bring him back in the fold, like you mentioned, K Jewelers, Chex Mix, Toys R Us, Mattel, all these different sponsors, they do not want to be, you know, intertwined with bullshit. So Hogan has got to be able to prove to Triple H, Vince, WWE that he is free from the bullshit. And if he's not free from the bullshit, then fuck him and fuck Hulkamania.
Oh, no, I feel you on that as well, 100%, Frank D. But also, you know as well as I do, everybody in this country loves a comeback story. And if WWE gets back into the Hulk Hogan business, you know, on top of him doing his promos and getting people all riled up in the live crowd, they're going to do the apology tour WWE style. You know it. He's going to be doing apologies. He's going to be talking about like why he said what he said. everything. They're gonna try to turn Hulk Hogan. They're gonna turn this into the Hulk Hogan redemption story, so that way people will forgive Hulk Hogan. Because if you can get people to forgive Hulk Hogan for this, then people stop buying the merchandise again, the action figures, and he may become more popular than he was before. And with WWE controlling that narrative, they stand to make a lot of money from this. So it's gonna be interesting to see how this all unfolds.
Well, here's the thing. I can see WWE doing a network special, Hulk Hogan uncut, uncensored, and maybe even having Steve Austin host it. Do that interview that he was supposed to do with Hulk Hogan before the scandal broke out. And just be upfront about the shit. Talk about it. Exploit the hell out of it. That's what WWE likes to do, right? So why not?
That I think that'd be the best avenue, because Steve Austin has a very good reputation of doing the kind of interviews that and asking the kind of questions that, the company probably doesn't want him asking. So I think it would be a really good idea. I mean, I think that's a brilliant idea, actually.
Oh yeah, they've neutered the Steve Austin podcast. Like, wow.
Oh, they certainly have. I mean, because he did the Ric Flair one this
Yeah.
past week, and I heard nobody talking about this one. But whenever you do watch the podcast with Steve Austin on the WWE Network, you can still see he's itching to ask that tough question. He really
Right.
is.
And that's the part right there that kills me about the Steve Austin, the Stone Cold podcast versus the Steve Austin podcast, which he does on his own. Is that WWE has to control that because it's on their network. And it's like, the first one he did with Vince I thought was really good. The second one he did with Triple H was good at some points. But they got to get back to what made that podcast work in the first place. And it's Stone Cold Steve Austin asking the questions that we, the fans, really want to know. We don't want any fluff bullshit questions or fluff bullshit interview that you would get with, say, Chris Jericho interviewing Stephanie McMahon or Chris Jericho interviewing John Cena. We want to know the real shit. You know what I mean?
Oh, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, Frank D, especially that Jericho Stephanie podcast. That was the worst.
Right.
That was just a ass-kissing podcast for like for an hour. That's all that was.
And on that note, we will be right back with more of the Raw deal. We have a lot more content, so stay tuned. We're going to be talking about Tyler Breeze and why his push was ended. And who ended the push? We're going to talk about Nakamura being stripped of the IWGP Intercontinental Championship. Lesnar versus Kevin Owens, rumored match for WrestleMania. Do you want to see it? Me and Abby are going to talk about that as well. Plus, we're going to talk about AJ Styles possibly appearing at the Royal Rumble and much, much more. So stay tuned to the Raw Deal Podcast right here at Gerwick.net.
You're listening to the Raw Deal Podcast with Frank D and Atlee Green right here at Gerwick.net.
All right, welcome back here to the Raw Deal Podcast at Gerwick.net. Adley, one of the big stories going on right now in the world of wrestling has to do with Tyler Breeze and why his push was stopped out of nowhere, why his push was ended. And apparently the story going around is that Triple H was very big on Tyler Breeze, a very big Tyler Breeze fan, a very big Tyler Breeze supporter. Tyler Breeze, of course, comes to the main roster. He gets put with Summer Rae. He's feuding with Dolph Ziggler. The guy loses a match to Dean Ambrose on Monday Night Raw. And all of a sudden, now his push has ended. And a lot of the sources are saying that the reason his push was ended is due to Vince McMahon not having any faith in him or having any faith in a character. What's your take on that?
I mean, this just goes to tell you that no matter how much influence Triple H has, no matter how many ideas the writing team comes up with, it all comes down to one person, Vincent Kennedy McMahon. And on previous episodes of the Raw Deal, you and I, Frank D, have talked about how we believe that Tyler Breeze was ready for the main roster a long time ago, but it all boils down to Dave Meltzer's report, where it turns out Vince McMahon is just not convinced that Tyler Breeze is worthy of the push he was getting and stopped it dead in its tracks, and now he's just another guy on the roster. And I think this really speaks to why there's a few people at NXT speaking about how, yeah, I really don't want to go to the main roster right now. Finn Balor said it. Bayley said it, a couple other wrestlers in NXT have said it, because they've seen the history that just because you're a big deal in NXT doesn't mean you're going to be a big deal in WWE or even a medium-sized deal. So I think there is that that philosophy that, you know, life is good in NXT, WWE, the money might be better, but you're not going to be a big deal in any way, shape, or form.
No, because at the end of the day, Vince McMahon, you know, controls that. You know, here's the thing. Triple H is able to get away with a lot because Vince McMahon really doesn't have anything to do with NXT. Yeah, it's his money. It's his property. We know that. But he lets Triple H do his thing down there. And Triple H, you know, for the most part, likes to protect these guys. You know, that's his kids. They come up to the main roster. And it's unfortunate because Tyler Breeze is a real, you know, stand-up guy. I've watched a lot of his stuff on Breaking Ground and just him as a performer. I mean, the guy was on the chopping block of getting fired and then came up with the Tyler Breeze gimmick. And I personally think that's what's probably holding him back is the gimmick. I'm not a big fan of the gimmick. I like Tyler Breeze as a guy, but I'm not a big fan of the gimmick. I think the gimmick is dated. I think people have done this. I mean, we've seen this with Rick Martel back in the day. We saw this with Shawn Michaels. I mean, everybody has tried this pretty boy kind of gimmick. And I think in 2016, it's just not going to fly. And I don't think Vince McMahon thinks it's going to fly either. And that's why his push has ended.
I mean, the way I look at it, I do like the gimmick. It reminds me of a spin on the Derek Zoolander gimmick. So I do like it, but I think you're right when it comes to the gimmick is dated for 2016. And to take it one step further, Frank T, I think all gimmicks are really dated because if you think about it, the only gimmick you really have in WWE currently that makes any kind of money is The Undertaker. I mean, think about it. Back in the day, you had wrestlers where their names, you know, it told you everything you need to know about the character. Rowdy Roddy Piper, Coco Beware, Macho Man Randy Savage, the Big Boss Man. And now today, you know, the wrestlers, Seth Rollins, John Cena, Randy Orton, Sheamus, Cesaro, Brock Lesnar. There's a big difference between, like, character and people just using a made-up real name. So I think that people just weren't buying it to a certain extent. But also, I don't think they gave it enough time either to show what Tyler Breeze could really do.
Tyler Breeze is a guy that can go far in that company if given the opportunity to do so. And I saw a lot of his matches he did, you know, in NXT, and I thought they were phenomenal. And I just haven't seen that big standout breakout performance on the main roster. I just haven't seen it, and I don't think we're going to see it now. It just seems to me that either Vince McMahon is not a fan of these people that Triple H is bringing up, or he's trying to directly sabotage these guys coming up to the main roster. It could be that Vince is kind of jealous of what's going on down in NXT, the fact that he has no part of that and is having so much success.
I think there's something to that, Frankie, because if you think about the characters that Vince McMahon brought on TV back in the day, and even the 90s and the early 2000s, this is a character that Vince would have loved back in the day, but now, not so much because the philosophy changed as far as character compared to using it just their regular name. But also, one thing that I saw that was evident, I'm not sure if you noticed it, but with the one versus all concept with Roman Reigns, where all the heels came out and were at ringside watching Kevin Owens in his chin lock fest with Roman Reigns, Tyler Breeze is out there. And man, Tyler Breeze looked so small compared to everybody else as far as the heels go. Even the medium-sized heels were dwarfing him, not just only in the height department, but also in the size as well. And while, you know, I'm not really a big proponent of size mattering in WWE because, you know, I'm not the talent, I'm about the wrestling. I just want to see a good wrestler with a good story. You know, Vince McMahon, you know, he likes those big guys. And I even said to myself, you know, if Vince ever sees a picture of how small Tyler Breeze looks compared to all the other heels that are currently outside the ring right now, it might not bode well for him. And I hope that's not what influenced Vince's decision to say, you know what, let's stop the Tyler Breeze push. But you never know.
Well, you know something, Adley, I think you might have something to that because Vince has always been, you know, a bigger guy fan. You know, he's a big guy fan. And that obviously is still the mentality over at WWE. But if you take a look at Tyler Breeze, who came up, like I said, with a lot of fanfare and it would be just the shit, and then his push automatically has ended because of Vince McMahon. You also look at Sasha Banks. You said yourself on a recent edition of The Raw Deal last year, where Vince wasn't really sold on Sasha Banks because of her size. Because she's not the biggest diva, and she's not, you know, it all plays into the whole size thing. And that could be the reason why Sasha Banks' push was ended. You know, Sasha Banks was the top bitch down at NXT, and then she comes up to the main roster, and she ain't shit.
And let me add to that, Frank D. There were a lot of rumors going around that when AJ Lee was very first paired with Daniel Bryan, and it was her in her push, in her career, she got her name recognition from being paired with Daniel Bryan, developing the whole crazy chick thing, and everything else. So that's how she made her mark in WWE. But there were a lot of rumors going around that Vince was like, you know what? Let's just find a girl that is shorter than Daniel Bryan, and that's who I want with him, because he doesn't like the idea of women being taller than the men that they're with. And if that's true, that, you know, he'd only picked AJ Lee for Daniel Bryan because she was the only one on the roster that was shorter than him. He's probably not liking the idea of the long-legged Summer Rae dwarfing Tyler Breeze as they walk to the ring.
Could be. So let's put this out on the table right now. Do you think, Edley, in 2016, with the talent they have right now, you know, on the main roster, like a Tyler Breeze, a Kalisto, all these different guys that, you know, are smaller, do you think maybe it's time for WWE to bring back the Cruiserweight division and bring back the Cruiserweight Championship?
I think it's time for WWE to bring back the Cruiserweight division and the Cruiserweight Championship if they do it the right way. But I don't have faith they can do it the right way. I mean, but there's a lot of ways they can do it without interfering with what's going on Raw. I mean, they have their own network, the WWE Network. They were touring with the idea a few years ago of making an all-women's show for 1 hour. They could easily do the same thing, make an all-cruiserweight show with the Cruiserweight Championship, and you have one cruiserweight match on Raw. But, you know, WWE does not have a history of doing cruiserweights right. Where you look at boxing, you especially look at UFC, I mean, the biggest matches happen at the lower weight classes, but Vince McMahon is still stuck in that big guy cell, and that's it. So it's really, you know, should they do it, but can they do it right? That's the bigger question.
I can see them taking this stagnant show that they have on the network right now called Superstars and just making that hour a cruiserweight hour.
Of course, they can do that with Superstars. They can do it with the main event. They can do it with any of their shows. I mean, it really would be a good opportunity for them to do so. But again, it all boils down to Vince McMahon having that belief that cruiserweights don't sell, smaller guys don't sell, which is atrocious considering you look at professional sports and how some of the biggest name professional athletes in the world, you know, are not really the biggest guys. And plus, when you look at movies as well, I mean, think about two of the biggest movie stars on the planet, Tom Cruise, Sylvester Stallone. They are not that big. And when you watch them in a movie, you don't hear people in the audience saying, oh, that guy's, you know, he's only 5'5", he's only 5'6". I can't believe that he's really going to knock somebody out or he's really going to save the day. You know, people don't do that. And I think that's something that Vince McMahon just doesn't get.
Right. And here's another thing, too, when you think about the situation. To think that cruiserweights don't sell, like you said, that's atrocious thinking. That's bullshit. Because if you look back to WCW, where the cruiserweight division was formed, you know, by name. I mean, because, you know, of course these guys were doing matches like that in ECW, but by name, the label Cruiserweight was in WCW. A lot of the most entertaining segments on Nitro involved the Cruiserweights. It involved Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero and Chris Jericho and Dean Malenko and Juventud Guerrera and Psychosis, you know, and Kaz Hayashi. These different guys were going out there, Billy Kidman. So I think that's bullshit. It's just like, you know, it's just WWE, you know, they tried, you know, at that time during the Cruiserweight, you know, era, they tried the light heavyweight division, and that didn't work either. And it just goes back to, they don't know how to produce something that they didn't create.
Oh, hell no. And plus, to speak on your point about the Cruiserweight division back in the day, I can tell you right now, I was one of those fans that had the remote control in my hand and was constantly switching back and forth between Raw and Nitro during the Monday Night War. I can tell you one of the times I wasn't changing the channel, that's whenever Nitro was airing a Cruiserweight match. I mean, I was watching the whole thing from beginning to end. And plus, JBL even said that the difference between WWE pay-per-views and WCW pay-per-views and then during the Monday Night War was that WWE's pay-per-views got better with each match that came by, from the opening match to the last match. Each match got better and better and better. And where in WCW, each match started off really good, but their matches got worse and worse and worse as you went along. And the matches that kick things off are usually the cruiserweight matches. So that tells you right there that it can work. It's just that you got to get Vince McMahon, you know, he's out of touch. He's always going to think that cruiserweights can't sell. And he just needs to realize that, hey, you know, this could be a really good thing. But in order to do it, I mean, there's a lot of things they have to do right. But the main thing is you can't have cruiserweights interacting with heavyweights, because if they ever do a cruiserweight heavyweight match, it's always going to be the same deal where the heavyweight just squashes the cruiserweight just to show, ah, I'm bigger, you're smaller, so I'm going to win. They can't do that. And Vince can't help himself but to have a big guy thrown around a cruiserweight just for the spectacle of it all.
Yeah, it's 2016, and I think we both agree, and maybe the listeners out there will let us know, but, you know, it's time to bring back the Cruiserweight Championship, because you got a lot of guys here that are never going to be Intercontinental Champion, they're never going to be U.S. Champion, and if you're Kalisto, you're not going to be U.S. Champion for very long. I mean, you went in on Monday, and you lost it on Tuesday.
I mean, Kalisto has a little bit more of an advantage than most of the small wrestlers, because WWE is currently in the mindset right now that they need a new Rey Mysterio Jr., and Kalisto fits the bill, so he's going to get a few more bones thrown his way than most people as a result. But then they're going to find out eventually with Kalisto the same thing they found out when they hired Ultimate Dragon, that they don't have another Rey Mysterio Jr. on their hands, and then his push will go by the wayside very quickly.
No, I mean, the thing that Kalisto should do is to not try to be Rey Mysterio version 2. He needs to find his own. And I think that he can do that, and not necessarily, because if he tries to be Rey Mysterio version 2, people are always going to look and say, oh, look at this guy here trying to be Rey Mysterio.
I mean, the thing is, oh, I agree with you 100%, Frank D, but the bad part about it is he might not have a choice. I mean, I would not be surprised if one day Vince McMahon or one of the writers tells Kalisto, hey, remember that 619 move that Rey used to do? Start doing that. So he might not have a choice.
I guess. Well, it's 2016. It's time to bring back the Cruiserweight division. No said on that. So let's transition away from the cruiserweights and let's talk about Nakamura. Nakamura has been stripped of the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, Adley. And reportedly, he is headed to the WWE Performance Center. What's your take on that?
Well, the word is Shinsuke Nakamura is going to be finishing out New Japan, and then after the month of January is over, he is headed to Orlando, Florida, the Performance Center, in order to be more acquainted with the American style of professional wrestling, or the WWE style of professional wrestling. I'm not really surprised that New Japan did this, because you got to remember, Japanese wrestling news hits a lot harder than American wrestling news. What I mean by that is you'll see pro wrestling news in the news cycle in Japan more often than you see WWE news stories. Like, if, let's say, Dean Ambrose is stripped of the IC title, you're not going to hear about that on SportsCenter. It's not going to be like on that ticker down below. But if Nakamura is stripped of the Intercontinental Championship, that's going to make a little bit of a news in Japan. Plus, it really helps New Japan Pro Wrestling, because you know, number one, as a fan of New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know that Nakamura's time is limited. You know he's about to leave. And you know whenever he has another title defense coming up, he's going to lose. So New Japan didn't want to be in a situation where they have a lame duck champion where you're watching a match where it's like, okay, we obviously know the finish. So they did the right thing. They stripped him of the belt, let him finish out the month. And what they're going to do is their February pay-per-view, they're going to have Kenny Omega, who pinned Shinsuke Nakamura at New Year's Dash. They're going to have Kenny Omega wrestle a mystery opponent for the now vacant Intercontinental Championship at New Japan Pro Wrestling in the next pay-per-view.
Right. So I guess the rumors were true, at least about Nakamura headed to WWE. So speaking of the New Japan 4, after we just got talking about Nakamura, AJ Styles, Carl Anderson, and Doc Gallows are still WWE bound. That's the latest word that we're getting, is that they are still headed to WWE. Now, the difference in the talks now is that AJ Styles could be headed to the main roster, while Gallows and Anderson probably going to be down at NXT. And they probably are going to do that Balor Club faction. Last night, they did a show somewhere. I don't know exactly where it was at, but it was an NXT event, which Sami Zayn wrestled Finn Balor for the NXT Championship. And Finn Balor played heel during the match. Now, I know it's two babyfaces, one guy's going to have to play the heel. But Finn Balor was doing a lot of tease of the Bullet Club. in that match. So WWE is definitely taking advantage of the speculation right now as it relates to these guys coming into the company. What are your thoughts on that?
I've heard several reports, Frank D, that the way the contracts are currently organized right now, as far as finishing up their previous obligations, that legally AJ Styles can start with WWE on the day of the Royal Rumble, where Karl Anderson and Doc Gallows can start with WWE legally the day after the Royal Rumble. So it all depends how WWE really wants to bring these guys in. Do they want to bring in AJ Styles on his own, or do they want to do this whole Bullet Club, Balor Club thing where they bring in all three guys as a unit? So it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. Plus, you got to remember, AJ Styles, his deal is a WWE deal, not an NXT deal, where Karl Anderson and Doc Gallows' deal is a NXT deal with the opportunity to go to WWE eventually. But even though those two, Gallows and Anderson, are NXT bound, doesn't mean they can't appear in the Royal Rumble, because we've had a couple of times now where you had an NXT wrestler in the WWE Royal Rumble, and then after a few weeks, you didn't see him again. It's kind of like with Bo Dallas. He went over, he eliminated Wade Barrett in one Royal Rumble, and then, you know, he lost to him the next night on Raw, and then you didn't see him again until they brought him back as Bo Leave. Rusev, he appeared in the Royal Rumble one year as a surprise, did his thing, caused some damage. After he got eliminated, you didn't see him again until the night after WrestleMania. So there is precedent for this.
Right, and on top of that, too, we have to look at this. Mark Henry has been removed from the Royal Rumble match itself. He was on the list for the updated contenders for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship match, but he has since been removed. So that maybe could open up a side for an AJ Styles to make a surprise appearance. Or we could be seeing the Bauer Club come in at the end, like we were talking about on the last edition of the Raw deal. We don't know yet, but it's very exciting right now to think about what's going to happen when these guys do eventually make their way onto the WWE scene. And let's go on here and talk about Brock Lesnar versus Kevin Owens. Now, this is a match, Adley, that a lot of people on the internet have been speculating that they want to see. They definitely want to see Brock Lesnar do something big at WrestleMania. They think Kevin Owens could be that guy. What do you think about this?
I'm kind of mixed on this, because I really did want to see a Brock Lesnar versus Kevin Owens match at WrestleMania until this past Monday night, where they had Kevin Owens look like a geek as being one of the 15 heels that Brock Lesnar just absolutely slaughtered. So it's kind of like, if Kevin Owens can't even get any offense on it on Brock Lesnar when there's 15 guys trying to beat up one dude, how the hell is he going to beat up Brock Lesnar in a one-on-one situation? So I really wasn't looking forward to it. Plus, I like what they did with Bray Wyatt, where the moment they knew it was going to be Bray Wyatt versus Undertaker at WrestleMania, they kept Bray Wyatt strong. He didn't lose a single match. He looked completely strong. He didn't look like a geek in any way, shape, or form. And then he was strong for his match with Undertaker. They're not doing that with Kevin Owens right now. So that tells me they might not be sure of who they're going to have work with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, or it's possible that they already know who's going to work with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and it's not going to be Kevin Owens. But that doesn't mean necessarily, even though that's how I feel about the situation, that doesn't mean that they can put Kevin Owens in the situation where he cuts this mega promo just bashing Brock Lesnar, or perhaps, you know, he eliminates Brock Lesnar from the Royal Rumble, and there's your feud right there. So there's still time to make this happen, but right now, the odds are not in his favor for this match to happen.
I actually can see a Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar match happening at WrestleMania. It's something that we haven't seen. And just the whole stare down between Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family and Brock Lesnar right there, it kind of makes you think that that might actually happen.
It was certainly a nice tease. But also, I mean, the reason I think that there's some credence to the Kevin Owens thing is because Paul Heyman, when he was negotiating with Vince McMahon and Stephanie McMahon to get Brock Lesnar out of the Royal Rumble, he kept on referring to Brock Lesnar as a prize fighter. And Kevin Owens also refers to himself as a prize fighter. So I thought perhaps maybe they're dropping the seeds, dropping some hints as to what we have in store, you know, come WrestleMania. But I would like the idea of a Wyatt family versus Brock Lesnar feud, because even though, you know, Bray Wyatt's not going to go over on Brock Lesnar because they don't have Bray Wyatt, they never have Bray Wyatt go over on a big name, I think it would tell an interesting story going into WrestleMania. I think that's a feud where you come up with, you know, 5, 6, 7 weeks of really good story to hype it up.
do you do Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar at, say, WrestleMania, or do you do it at Fastlane? Since they want to make Fastlane, it's been reported, they want to make Fastlane a big deal. They want to make it a pay-per-view this year. So do you put Brock Lesnar versus Bray Wyatt at Fastlane? And then you save Kevin Owens for Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania.
It can't hurt. I mean, I think you're in a good position no matter which way you go. You could do Owens at Fastlane and then Bray at WrestleMania, or you could flip the script and do the reverse. I mean, either way, I think you're telling some good stories, and I think that, you know, Brock's in a good position because both those guys are going to make Brock look good, and then when it comes time for Brock to go all Suplex City and just suplex somebody a bunch of times, they can also take all the suplexes. They're a bunch of young guys that have many bumps ahead of them, you know, so it's a win-win no matter which way you go in that situation.
Yeah, but here's the problem with Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Bray Wyatt, for the last 2 years at Mania, has lost. He needs the big one. He needs a win. And if he goes in the ring against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, like you just said, he's going to lose. And this guy can't really afford to be losing any more matches.
I mean, oh no, I completely agree with you. I mean, I think it's been time that Bray Wyatt gets that big win, and he hasn't had it yet. He gets every win but the big win, and that's what's really holding his character back. But with Brock Lesnar and the fact that he's part-time and the fact that they're paying him all this money, the only person I see beating Brock Lesnar in any capacity in the near future is Roman Reigns.
Yeah, but, I mean, do we really want to see Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar again?
Oh, no. Trust me. I do not want to see Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns again. That's something I do not want to see. But at the same time, when you look at WWE's perspective, for the most part, the Roman Reigns experiment is working right now, and they need to keep everything they can think of in order to make sure that this train keeps on rolling positively as far as Roman Reigns is concerned. And one of the things that could help Roman Reigns become even bigger is a clear, clean-cut win over Brock Lesnar in the middle of the ring, especially when it will be one of Brock's first losses in a very long time. So, you know, clean loss, not counting the SummerSlam one. So I just have this feeling that they're saving that loss for one person, that's Roman Reigns.
Well, I'll tell you what, if they do have Roman Reigns, let's say Roman Reigns wrestles Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania again. This time, they got to do something different. And the only difference they can do is they're going to have to turn Roman Reigns heel. And Paul Heyman has to align himself with Roman Reigns as the mouthpiece for Roman Reigns.
You know, I would have said that a year ago, Frank T, but I don't know if you necessarily have to now because last year, Roman Reigns was getting booed out of every arena in the country, every arena in the world. But right now, he's getting more cheers than boos. So I don't think you necessarily have to turn him heel. And I know, but also, you have to think about, there is a good possibility that the main event of WrestleMania this year ends up being Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. And there's an easy way for them to hype it. They'll probably say, you know, there's no interference this time. There's no Money in the Bank either. Winner to cash in the briefcase because Sheamus already cashed it in. So right now, there's no looming threat. They can say, this is the match that was going to happen last year. This is the main event this year. And we're guaranteed a winner this time. There's going to be a guarantee no interference. So they kind of use that spin. Will it work? I don't think so. But I wouldn't be surprised if they went that route.
Well, you know, my feeling has always been like this. Roman Reigns, all of a sudden now, everybody loves Roman Reigns. And it kind of reminds me of The Rock back in 1998 when everybody was loving The Rock and then The Rock turned heel and joined Vince and Shane and formed a corporation. Because Rock said, Rocky never forgot the fans chanting, Rocky sucks. So all of a sudden now Roman Reigns is supposed to forgive all the fans for, you know, booing him every single night and taking his moment at the Royal Rumble and booing him out of the building. He's supposed to forget about all that? No, I think that would be the perfect time would be to turn him at WrestleMania and just say, fuck you. Fuck the fans. That's what I would do. Because, you know, if he turns now, he's at the momentum right now. But if Roman Reigns was to turn right now, when he turns back again, he'll be bigger than he is right now.
You know, if John Cena wasn't injured and still on the roster as an active wrestler, I would say, yeah, that is a great idea. You should go along with that. But the fact that they don't have John Cena right now, I think they're going to be gun shy as far as turning Roman Reigns heel. I would love to see it once John Cena comes back, but I just don't think it's going to happen right now. But in general, it's a very good idea.
Right, right. And hopefully one day it will come to fruition. And speaking of The Rock, Rock is going to be at WrestleMania this year. We speculated on the last edition of Raw Deal. We don't know if he's going to wrestle. We don't know what he's going to do. You know, coming up right now, Adley, what do you think The Rock is going to do at WrestleMania? I mean, I'm looking at maybe he's going to host the show.
Yeah, he may be the host. And usually whenever they have a host, they kind of have those pseudo, you know, general manager authority powers where they can make matches, start things over again, pretty much do whatever they want to do. So it wouldn't be surprised me if The Rock was the host again for a WrestleMania, just like he was at WrestleMania 27. But you mentioned the insurance thing, Frank D, right, about how The Rock's not going to be able to wrestle due to insurance. So I looked into that a little bit more to see what the particulars were, and man, oh man, there's no way he's wrestling unless he can convince some studio that he's not going to get hurt, because Rock got really, really injured and it was his second match with John Cena at WrestleMania 29, and they had to hold off shooting Hercules for a while so he could recover. He didn't exactly recover, so they started shooting the movie Hercules while he was injured, and he had to hold off surgery until that movie was over. Then he got surgery, did rehab and everything else, because he didn't want to stop his momentum of getting all these acting gigs. So he shot that movie while he was in a lot of pain. And plus, once word got out that, okay, not only is he injured, he's injured pretty badly, but he's in a lot of pain while on set, studios, directors, producers, actors, they're not going to want to work with a guy where they're going to feel, okay, he's doing these outside ventures that are going to get him seriously hurt, which is going to ruin my venture trying to direct this movie. But they don't want to also work with an actor that can't fully deliver because he's in so much pain. So he's not wrestling. He's not wrestling at all.
Let's talk about Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho, his latest run in WWE is being reported that it's going to be one that lasts until after WrestleMania. And he's supposed to be turning heel very shortly and going to feud with Dean Ambrose over the Intercontinental Championship. Now, Adley, myself personally, I don't give a damn about Chris Jericho. I really don't. He's kind of overrated in a lot of it, and I'm just not feeling him. You know, it's not 1999 anymore. It's 2016. I think Jericho's best days are behind him, but I think if he's coming back to put over Dean Ambrose, that's great. But this is kind of a lost opportunity, because a few months ago, Jericho actually teamed with Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose. They teased a heel turn right there, and it went nowhere. They didn't do anything. And all of a sudden, now we're going to come back to this point again. I think it's stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the build-up's going to be anything special. But when you look at Chris Jericho, it's really similar to the situation with Shinsuke Nakamura in New Japan Pro Wrestling. They took the belt away from Shinsuke Nakamura because of the fact they didn't want him as a lame duck champion. They can't really market a title defense where you know their audience realizes that he's going to lose the title the next time he defends the belt. With Chris Jericho, we now know that every single time he's going to be in a big match situation, he's going to lose because he's there just to put people over. And while you can be entertaining and while just never winning matches, there's always a point where that particular well runs dry, and I think it has for Chris Jericho.
Right. I'm just not feeling him. You know, I'm just not feeling it. I mean, the whole segment when he came out a couple weeks ago and had the whole thing with the New Day, I didn't think it was all that entertaining. It's very dated. Unless Chris Jericho is going to change up his character or something, I don't know what the hell he's going for. And I just don't think it's going to work. But if they want to turn him heel and he's going to feud with Dean Ambrose and do something for Ambrose at WrestleMania, do the favors for him, that's cool. But if they're thinking about actually putting the Intercontinental Championship belt on Jericho, I think that's a step backward.
I don't know if it's a step backwards for Chris Jericho, but I do think it's a very good opportunity to get that classic WrestleMania match that I think we've been missing for the last few WrestleManias, because despite what you think about Chris Jericho, despite what anybody may think of Dean Ambrose, they're both two talented individuals, and I think a program between these two, with Jericho being the heel and Ambrose being the babyface and being legitimately, you know, arguably the most popular babyface WWE has right now, I think you can, you know, really make some waves with that particular program. But then again, can they make it interesting enough where you don't care about the fact that Chris Jericho is definitely going to lose that feud. I mean, does Jericho get the belt at Fastlane and then drops it back to Ambrose at WrestleMania?
I think that's a better idea to do that. And here's the thing. What I meant by step backwards for Jericho, I meant step backwards for the Intercontinental Championship and what they're trying to do with Dean Ambrose as far as, you know, rebuilding that belt, because it seems like they've been playing hot potato, hot potato, hot potato with the Intercontinental Championship. And I think that if you were to do what you're saying right now and take the IC belt and give it to Jericho at Fastlane, if he drops it off at WrestleMania to Dean Ambrose, I think that's a bigger deal. I really do.
No, I mean, that I do agree with, because if you look at the Intercontinental Championship, they've done a pretty decent job in keeping on people long enough where it doesn't seem like it's, you know, just a wasted title, but there are some times where it does feel like a wasted title, and there's some missed opportunities WWE has had. So I would think that WWE would kind of learn from that and just keep the belt on Ambrose and make it a title defense, but at the same time, I see them just dropping it and then giving it back to him at WrestleMania, which actually makes me wonder if people will care even less about the match, because it's going to be, well, you know what is going to happen. You know he's going to get the belt back. You know he's not going to win. So that's another thing you have to wonder. Plus, WWE, you know what's going to happen is when they promote WrestleMania and they make all the matches, Roman Reigns, Triple H, Brock Lesnar, Undertaker, Rock, Austin, and Hogan, if he comes back, those characters, those guys are going to get the most pub for WrestleMania. That's whatever they're doing is going to get all the hype, and everything else is going to be just, you know, kind of fall by the wayside as far as what matters. And that match could get lost in the shuffle. As good as it could be, WWE might not promote it as much.
Right, and that's the thing. If it's worth it, I don't know if it's worth it right now. I really don't know. I'll know in a couple weeks whenever they do what they're going to do with Chris Jericho, because I'm not really a big fan of Dean Ambrose either, to be honest with you.
I mean, I Dean Ambrose is not everybody's cup of tea. I'm a very big Dean Ambrose guy myself, but it's just going to be interesting to see for all we know, they could give Dean Ambrose and Chris Jericho the 9-minute treatment. What I mean by that is, back at WrestleMania 22, the triple threat match for the World Heavyweight Championship, Kurt Angle, Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio, they find out, you know, 15 minutes before match time, oh, by the way, your match has been cut down to 9 minutes, including entrances. So, I mean, something like that could happen, because you know they're not taking any time off of Brock's match, not taking any time off the main event, not taking any time off Undertaker's match. So, there's a lot of variables going into this situation.
And I guess we're going to find out exactly the direction they're going to go after the Royal Rumble, because apparently the Royal Rumble is already booked. They know what matches they're going to do for WrestleMania. So it's going to be very telling to see if they actually go with Chris Jericho versus Dean Ambrose for the IC Championship. Where are they going to go with Kevin Owens at this point? Where are they going to go with Bray Wyatt at this point? You know, they spent a lot of time building the Wyatt family up the past couple months. And was he the one getting ready for Brock Lesnar? We don't know. Where does Triple H fit into this equation? Does Triple H come back at the Royal Rumble? Who knows? Okay, Ali, and before we finish here with the Raw deal, let's talk a little bit about Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe is not exactly the most over guy on the NXT roster right now. If you look at the reactions he gets, it's kind of so-so. I'll go back to NXT TakeOver London, when he came out there for the NXT Championship match, and it really didn't get a pop from the crowd. You would think, because of the London crowd, that Joe would have been getting this monster reaction, and he didn't. And then you look at Full Sail, it's kind of like whatever when Samoa Joe comes out there. And once again, it's kind of one of those situations we were talking about earlier with Singh. I was kind of taken back by that. Why do you think Samoa Joe is really not over and really not connecting with the Full Sail University crowd?
I think it's two things. Number one, the shock value is gone. I mean, the holy shit chants when Samoa Joe first showed up in NXT, because it was shocking. It was a great moment. You didn't see it coming. So I think that particular hype is worn off. And also, Samoa Joe really hasn't brought anything different to the table. I mean, we've all seen what he does and what he did in TNA, what he did in Ring of Honor, and that was some good stuff. But I think once you come to NXT, which is a WWE product, you have to, you know, bring what brought you to the dance, but also do something a little bit different. And I don't think Samoa Joe has done anything different to say, you know what, I'm in a new house now. This is a new ball game now. And I got some new tricks on my sleeve. And I don't think Samoa Joe has shown anything new, which is why the audience with NXT has turned on him.
And it seems like ever since that match, you know, that he did with Kevin Owens, it's kind of fell flat a little bit. And I don't know how they can salvage it at this point. I mean, maybe the crowd will get, you know, more hyped as we get Joe into some bigger, matches. I mean, the biggest match he's had so far has been with Finn Balor, but I do see potential there in the Sami Zayn versus Samoa Joe program. I definitely do see the potential in that. So, but I don't know, man. It's just, I was watching it the other day, and I'm like, wow, this guy really is not over. And that's just crazy.
But
just knowing Samoa Joe's reputation, everything that he's done in the business.
Oh, I completely agree with you, but I'm glad WWE didn't fight it and decide, hey, you know what? Let's fight this and keep him as a babyface. I'm glad they said, you know what? They're booing him, so let's turn him heel, because I think Samoa Joe is a much better heel than he is a babyface. And it took him a while, but he got a lot of love from his match with Finn Balor at NXT London, but it took him a while. So it took a while for it to happen. So, you know, there's still hope that, you know, they can salvage the whole Samoa Joe not being over with NXT, or as over as we think he should be. But I'm glad they turned him heel, because I tell you right now, since now he's got a feud with Sami Zayn, no one's booing Sami Zayn. Absolutely nobody. So there's no reason to fight that. Just keep Samoa Joe as a heel. Everybody loves Sami Zayn, and I think they'll do fine. I think this is a storm that Samoa Joe can weather. I really do.
Well, let me ask you this question real quick. What do you think about NXT Kids?
I think it's another way. I have no problem with it. It's another way for WWE to really branch out with NXT, because as we talked about, Vince doesn't really pay attention to what's happening at NXT. You know, Tyler Breeze is a great example. He's over at NXT. Triple H pushed him on the main roster, and all of a sudden Vince goes, what the hell? I'm not buying this, and the push is you know, dead on arrival. But even though Vince doesn't pay attention to the everyday workings of NXT, he knows now that, okay, we got something. He knows that this is something that could potentially make the company a lot of money. So now you're starting to see these other things. NXT Kids, where it's like, can we appeal to the kid audience instead of just the hardcore internet-based wrestling audience? That's what they're trying to find out. And if they feel that this show catches on, or they find some information, some data that suggests, you know what, kids really like NXT too, you know, there may be some changes in store for NXT, and you may see a lot of new things for NXT that could be good for them, but could be bad for them as well.
I think it's all bad, man. I really do. I think it's all bad. I think that NXT is probably the last vestige we have as hardcore wrestling fans of a more adult, pure wrestling show. And I think that when you do shit like this, it's going to hurt the product in the long run. I really think that they're going to turn it into something that it's not, and it's going to really start to turn a lot of people off from the show. I mean, if they wanted to do something like this, they could have done that with Superstars or Main Event or some show that really nobody cares about. But you're taking NXT, and it's the hottest brand right now, and then you want to do something like this. I mean, I don't really think it's going to work in the long run. I think, like I said, you're going to turn a lot of people off.
No, I think there's a great potential for that to happen, Frank D, because in my opinion, when WWE does pro wrestling right, very few people do it better. But they're not in the pro wrestling business, as they like to say. They're in the sports entertainment business. And it all boils down to whether Vince feels this can make him money. Because Vince, for the most part, looks at NXT as just this developmental phase that's grooming the future. He doesn't see what everybody else sees with NXT. He doesn't see, or he's not going to allow himself to see or accept the fact that, you know, your NXT product's more over than your Monday Night Raw product. But I said it last week, and I still stand by it, Frank D. The second you see an ad that says Chex Mix presents NXT TakeOver, that's it. It's a wrap. It's done.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Definitely agree with you on that one. You know, Ali, earlier we were talking about the New Japan 4 coming over to WWE, but there's also other talents that are reportedly headed to WWE as well, and I'm talking about the American Wolves.
You know, I was surprised, but then after thinking about it, I'm not really surprised, because you got to think about TNA situation where they still have a handful of wrestlers that are under contract. contracts are something that TNA doesn't do anymore unless your name is James Storm. And the Wolves pretty much know that, you know, once their contract is up at the end of April, they're going to be offered the same pay per appearance deal as everybody else has, which means no more guaranteed money. And with WWE looking to sign up all of the premier talent to either NXT or WWE, those are two of the better wrestlers that you can get. So I think it makes sense for them to go to NXT and see what they can do.
Right. I mean, NXT is the place to be as far as right now, so many different tag teams. You got Jordan and Gable down there. You got the Mechanics. You got Enzo and Big Cass. So, I mean, it's going to be hot if you get the Wolves down there as well.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, they're probably not going to be called Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards. I mean, I think one of their names is Eric Cahill when they wrestled that quick NXT match. I mean, they may keep those same names. They may get different names, but I think they're going to change their names a little bit, because I don't think they're as popular as Samoa Joe, where it's financially feasible to keep Samoa Joe as Samoa Joe, where the Wolves, you can really do a lot to change their name, change their gimmick a little bit.
And, Abby, before we close out the Raw deal, let's talk about Shane McMahon. You know, Shane McMahon just had a birthday. And, you know, here's a guy that I miss seeing Shane McMahon on my TV. I think that Shane McMahon was one of the best performers that WWE ever had. I think he's a hell of a lot better than his sister. I'm being honest with you on that one. And WWE were going to produce a Shane McMahon DVD that was supposed to come out this year. But then Shane McMahon was going to have nothing to do with the project, so they decided against doing it. And I think that's kind of telling that Shane McMahon would not have anything to do with WWE or this DVD project. I think that's very interesting. I mean, is there a riff in the family somewhere? Is there, you know, is there a beef somewhere between Vince and Shane? And the fact that, you know, what's supposed to be Shane's is now going to be Stephanie and Triple H's? What do you think?
I mean, and mind you, Frank D, this is all just speculation on my part, just based on the reports I've read. But for years and years and years, it was assumed by everybody that someday Shane McMahon is going to take the mantle and become the head of WWE. That's what Shane McMahon grew up believing. That's what Shane McMahon was groomed for. And then I think over the years, you know, starting in the 2000s, it became more increasingly evident that Shane McMahon will always have a very big position in WWE, and his feedback is always going to be very valued, but it turned out that it's going to be Stephanie probably running things once Vince McMahon is gone. And now we know for a fact that when it's time for Vince McMahon to go, Triple H and Stephanie are going to be in charge of WWE and not Shane McMahon. And now we're in the year 2016, so that day is coming. That day is coming sooner rather than later. And personally, I don't think Shane McMahon wants to be around WWE right now when he realizes not only am I not going to be the head of WWE, which is what I was groomed for since birth, but also now the people that are going to get the company are going to get it very soon. He probably wants nothing to do with it.
Right, but it's just funny to me that you don't see Shane show up on WWE TV anytime. You don't even hear him mentioned at all. You know, and I just think that's very, very weird.
Well, also, he didn't attend WrestleMania or SummerSlam this past year, so that's also very telling. I mean, the thing is, I mean, when you grow up with Shane McMahon, I mean, Vince McMahon had him start at the very bottom. He started as a member of the ring crew, then eventually started as a referee, then he started as a PA, then he started as a cameraman. So Vince had him work every job imaginable so he could really get a feel for the business before taking the mantle as being the head of WWE, and now that's gone. That's not happening, and we don't really know why Vince decided, hey, you know, I'd rather now give this to my daughter and my son-in-law instead of my son. And right there, that places a glass ceiling on Shane McMahon, and he realized, you know what, I'm no longer. He saw the writing on the wall. He probably saw it years earlier, but didn't want to believe it. But once he realized, hey, you know what, I'm not getting this company, this place is not mine, he left. And he decided he's going to forge his own future, win, lose, or draw. Whether he's successful in his outside ventures or not, he's going to do his own thing instead of just, you know, working for a life that's no longer going to be his.
Yeah, I just think it's sad, man. I just think that, you know, for Stephanie to get the company and she's going to run that company into the ground, in my opinion, I might be wrong, but I'm just looking at it like this. It's been a steady decline since Stephanie took over as head of creative so many years ago. They're doomed to fail when this happens. But that's going to do it for this edition of the Raw Deal today. Atlee, one more time, go ahead and plug your social media.
You guys can hit me up on Twitter at Atlee Green, and you can check out my blog at thegreenscreen.net.
Absolutely. And for the latest in pro wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gerweck.net. For Atlee Green, I'm Frank D. We will check you next time on the next edition of the Raw Deal Podcast.